Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to thank the organizers for organizing a really wonderful conference and also for inviting me to speak here. I'm going to be telling you about work done in collaboration with Dominic Els and Bela Bauer. So, I swear I did not coordinate the first slide here with Drew's, and any resemblance is entirely coincidental. And I actually want to make a slightly different point, although not unrelated, which is, you know, for some of us for whom a very important part of our education was played by quantum field theory and statistical mechanics, we were, in a way that people who drew these maps were kind of telling people to stay on solid ground and avoid, you know, uncharted territories in the oceans where there were dragons, we were also kind of subtly nudged towards staying on firmer ground, where step zero in any problem is you write down the partition function, preferably an imaginary time where it's well defined, and then start doing physics at that point. For those of us with that kind of education, it also was then natural to avoid places where there are dragons, like non-equilibrium systems, where that starting point probably isn't a good one. What I'd like to tell you about is that, nevertheless, even if we do venture out there, there is interesting, universal, non-equilibrium quantum phenomena. Drew already made that case, I think, very eloquently already this morning, and Vedika is going to continue. When I pass the baton on to her, she's going to continue to make that case. You know, these include topological phases in periodically driven systems like flow-k topological phases, flow-k SPTs, stable gapless edge modes, which we heard about this morning, broken symmetry phases, and, you know, which have been explored in a number of interesting works. And if I've missed any here, I apologize for my ignorance of them. I'm going to focus on one particular type of broken symmetry phase, namely time crystals, which spontaneously break time translation symmetry. As Drew mentioned this morning, many-body localization can stabilize phases like this, but I also want to make the point that that's not, probably not necessary. Actually, it's not necessary. You know, we're used to thinking about, especially when you think about topological phase of matter, and basically all the talks on the first 4 days of this conference are considering situations like this, where you have a ground state or some ground states, perhaps if they're topologically degenerate, an energy gap delta, and then some low-lying excited states above that energy gap. Okay. But you and we're sort of taught to focus on these things, and that's where the universal properties lie. But actually, you know, even drawing a picture like this is a little bit like this old cartoon of a New Yorker's view of the United States, where there's, you know, Manhattan, and then there's the Hudson River, and then there's kind of everything else, right? But actually, you know, the rest of the country is pretty big and actually pretty different also from Manhattan. And, you know, if we're going to take seriously this idea of non-equilibrium phenomena, we're not going to be able to just focus on this. We're going to be looking up here at sort of generic states high up in the spectrum, and their properties are going to be quite different, and the way we'll have to think about them are going to be quite different. Okay. In addition, as in the case of Andrew's talk, of Drew's talk and Vedika's talk to follow, I'm going to focus on periodically driven systems. That is to say, systems in which the Hamiltonian has a discrete time translation symmetry. Capital T here does not mean temperature. It's the period of the drive. And if you translate forward by one period of the drive, the Hamiltonian returns to its initial value. Okay? So that's the period of the drive. Some of the kind of just to set some terminology here. So if you have look at Schrodinger's equation for a time-dependent Hamiltonian that's periodic, and you look at the time translation operator you obtain from Schrodinger's equation, which is this time-ordered exponential integral. If you look at that over one period of the drive, that's what's called the flow-k operator. Okay, that's the generator of the time translation symmetry. You can look at the eigenstates of that operator. Their eigenvalues basically lie in a circle because energy is only conserved modulo 2 pi over the period t, and those are the Floquet eigenstates and the corresponding Floquet eigenvalues. Okay, so as Drew said this morning, I'm going to be using the word Floquet a lot, basically because of this context of periodically driven systems. And instead of energies and energy eigenstates, we'll be talking about Floquet eigenvalues and Floquet eigenstates. Okay. So to think about both generic states in the spectrum of some, you know, maybe even time-independent system, or especially to consider Floquet eigenstates, a useful way to think about them, and let's consider for now a closed system. So let's consider some closed system, which is in one of these eigenstates, either a highly excited energy eigenstate or a Floquet eigenstate. Consider a subsystem of that system, A, okay, which is large but much smaller than the total system. Then if we consider the reduced density matrix for that system, obtained by tracing out all the degrees of freedom outside the system A, call that rho A, and we can compute its von Neumann entropy, or perhaps some other entropies like Rényi entropy, and that's the entanglement entropy between the system A and the rest of the world, okay, or the rest of this closed system. And we can use that as a way of thinking about, it's a good way to start thinking about non-equilibrium states, states either highly excited in the spectrum or in driven systems. Let's talk about just static systems, because they're probably a little more familiar. So if we consider kind of what is sort of the generic case and really was probably believed to be the only case up until about 10 years ago, then the idea there, as enunciated in the eigenstate thermalization hypothesis due to Josh Deutsch and Mark Stradnicki, who's here, is that if I take some generic excited eigenstate and I look, you know, of non-zero energy density, so sort of more generically in the spectrum, I look at its the reduced density matrix for it, it basically looks like the thermal density matrix. Or in other words, if you look at your subsystem A, basically the rest of the system is acting like a heat bath for that subsystem A, and so its reduced density matrix is just the thermal density matrix. Okay, as you would expect for a system in the canonical ensemble, they can exchange energy with a bath. Now, the thing that we've learned in the last 10 years through the work of a variety of people, some of whom I've tried to cite here, and again, I apologize for not being able to fit all the relevant work in here, but is that that doesn't happen, okay? Because in a system with sufficiently strong disorder, meaning impurities, randomness, and so on, the system is not able to act as its own heat bath, and as a consequence, rather than that reduced density matrix looking like a thermal density matrix, which would therefore have an entanglement entropy, which is just the expected thermal entropy, you have an entanglement entropy which is proportional to the surface area of the system. Okay, so this is very far from equilibrium, looks nothing like an equilibrium system in that respect. Now if we turn to driven or Floquet systems, periodically driven systems, there's basically the same dichotomy. If eigenstate thermalization holds, then what you expect is the system just absorbs energy, heats up to infinite temperature, and the reduced density matrix is just the identity matrix. So that's kind of featureless. On the other hand, it's possible for many body localization to occur, as a result of which the entanglement entropy in some Floquet eigenstate looks like the entanglement entropy of a static MBL system, which is to say it goes as the surface area of the subsystem. Okay, so it doesn't heat up to infinite temperature, and as was emphasized in this beautiful work of Vedika and Kimani and collaborators, which I think we'll hear about more in the next talk, this is a place to look for non-trivial phases of matter, that because unlike this situation where everything's going to be featureless, this is a good place to look for non-trivial phases of matter. Now, I'm not going to try in this talk to explain many-body localization, because that's an entire subject of its own, and in any case, Drew already gave as good of a one-slide summary as could possibly be given for a pretty rich and well-developed subject. But for me, actually, it's actually not necessary, because for me, many-body localization is basically a gateway drug, what they call a gateway drug, to thinking about non-equilibrium systems. And from there on, it's kind of a slippery slope to wilder things. And on that note, okay, so on that note, let's talk for a moment about time crystals. Okay, so this is an idea, from a few years ago by Frank Wilczek and Shapir. They say, well, can't we, spontaneously break other symmetries, like a crystal spontaneously breaks translational symmetries and rotational symmetries, I guess. Can we not have states that spontaneously break time translation symmetry? Okay. And that idea was met with a healthy dose of skepticism. People like Bruno Nozier said, well, the various ideas that people had for time crystals really aren't actually in their ground state. Some approximate calculation may have led you to believe you're looking at a ground state that was oscillating, but actually it's not really the ground state, and the system will radiate away its energy and decay into the ground state, and there'll be no time crystal type behavior, no oscillations or anything like that, no spontaneous breaking time translation symmetry. This was sharpened up in interesting work. I mean, first of all, of course, we have to think about what that really means. I mean, it can't really mean that the one-point function of some operator is a periodic function, because after all, if you just think of how the ground state or any other eigenstate varies in time, it just varies by a phase. So something like that can't really happen. But the two-point function, on the other hand, could. And Watanabe and Oshikawa, Masaki, I think he's here, they proved that actually this is not possible. So they gave a nice definition of what it really means to have a time crystal or time translation symmetry breaking in the ground state, or for that matter, in thermal equilibrium state, where also this is not possible. Okay. Now, so the nice thing about that work is that it gave a very precise definition and proved that a no-go theorem that time crystal is not possible. But it's very often the case that a no-go theorem is a challenge, and the challenge is to find what the assumptions are in that theorem that maybe in the real world you could get around and thereby evade it. Okay. So in this case, really it's the fact that we may have some part of the definition may be too restrictive, and it's that we really need to go beyond the assumption that we're in the ground state or thermal equilibrium. Okay, because certainly in those cases their proof rules that out. But on the other hand, that is a little scary, and that is kind of going where there are dragons, because once you're out of equilibrium, well then it's maybe too easy to get non-trivial time dependence, and really does it make sense to think of it as a time crystal at all, or is this kind of do you end up just with everything at that point? So so actually what I'm really talking about now is what systems are not time crystals, okay? Because if we were going to have a slightly different definition or a different definition that applies outside of thermal equilibrium, we want to make sure that it's not too broad. It needs to be a useful definition. So for instance, we don't want things like Rabi oscillations. Okay? You put a spin in a Zeeman field, and if it's not lying along the z-axis, it will oscillate. And, okay, that's obviously something we don't want to consider to be a time crystal. Okay, we don't want that. And really, already in Watanabe and Oshikawa's definition, they already point out, you really want to consider, you don't want to think about, zero-dimensional systems, which of course their ground state could easily break a symmetry, that doesn't have the rigidity that we ordinarily would like to associate with a broken symmetry state. So any good definition such as theirs should not include that. You might similarly say, well, what about a pendulum? You have a pendulum, or any simple harmonic oscillator, that's spontaneously in some sense breaking time translation symmetry, but that's also zero-dimensional system. So any good definition shouldn't really allow that. Okay, but then there's some kind of borderline cases because, well, we have the AC Josephson effect, okay? There's an interesting paper by Sacha about periodically driven Bose-Einstein condensate bouncing off a mirror, which spontaneously breaks a discrete time translation symmetry in that case. So these are kind of borderline cases, actually, in the sense that we probably don't really want a definition in which would rule out everything of that nature. But they also are probably not the most interesting situations in the sense that the time crystal behavior is piggybacking off of some other broken symmetry. Really, there's just some other broken symmetry, and that some other broken symmetry is effectively allowing us to think of the system, when we have broken symmetries, we can kind of think of the system as a zero-dimensional, almost classical system where the only variable you worry about is the order parameter. And actually, if you think about it, in some sense, if I look at a pendulum, and more importantly, if you explicitly break that other symmetry, the time crystal behavior is gone. Okay, So really, in that case, the time crystal is kind of just living off of some other broken symmetry, and it's gone when the other symmetry is gone. If you think about it, actually, a pendulum is kind of like that too. I mean, this pendulum actually has 10 to the 23rd atoms in it, and it's not really a zero, you know, one single degree of freedom, but it's the fact that it breaks symmetries, and the broken symmetries give it rigidity that allows it us to treat it as effectively a zero-dimensional system. Okay, so so to come up with a definition, let's step back for a moment and briefly review the definition or definitions of ordinary spontaneously broken symmetry. So one way of defining spontaneously broken symmetry, so let's consider just the transverse field Ising model, one dimension, okay? And in order to define the broken symmetry that occurs in the ground state here for sufficiently small h compared to j, well, one way to define it is, you know, that it has two ground states, one with the spins pointing, mostly pointing up in the small h limit, the other with the spins primarily pointing down. And you can put on a small, even an infinitesimal symmetry breaking field, maybe even just on the boundary spin. And if you do, that tilts this double well potential. And as a result, you get a non-vanishing expectation value for the order parameter, which is not zero, even in the limit that you take that order parameter, very, very small. Okay. Another way to think about it, on the other hand, is let's say we don't want to introduce any small symmetry breaking fields as perturbations. We could just live with the fully symmetric Hamiltonian of the transverse field Ising model. You look at its spectrum, and what you notice is that it has two nearly degenerate ground states, split exponentially, only exponentially split. One is the ground state that's a positive superposition of the spins pointing up and the spins pointing down, and one is the anti-symmetric superposition of those two states. So the low-lying states, and particularly the ground state, is a cat state. And if you were to actually go to the thermodynamic limit where these became exactly degenerate, then you could say, well, I could also consider the non-cat states. However, if you were to look at states that are eigenstates of both the Hamiltonian and of the symmetry, the transform under the symmetry as eigenstates, then those actually have to be cat states. Okay. Or another way of saying is that those states have to violate cluster decomposition. Okay. In particular, when I say that they have to violate cluster decomposition, what I mean is that they cannot be short-range correlated states. So short-range correlated states would be those states such as the one, you know, the product state with all spins up, and anything that you can obtain from it in a finite amount of time through evolution with a local Hamiltonian or a finite depth unitary quantum circuit. Okay. On the other hand, and so these are things that you imagine that you really can prepare in experiments in a finite amount of time. On the other hand, long-range correlated states, such as the ground state of the transverse field Ising model with no symmetry-breaking fields, such as this, well, those you cannot really prepare them in a finite amount of time from a product state, and they'll, you know, rapidly decohere if coupled to the environment. So the short-range correlated states, another way of saying, which I just said on the previous slide, is those are the states that obey cluster decomposition. The long-range correlated states are the ones that don't. Okay. Okay. So with that preamble, we can, I think, now give a precise, or actually two sharp definitions of what time translation symmetry breaking means, not restricted to an equilibrium system or to a ground state necessarily, as follows. So one is, it occurs if for each initial time t in any initial state that initial time, there exists some operator such that if you look at later times, the expectation value of that operator will not be periodic with the period of the, in this case, the period of the drive, okay? The discrete time translation symmetry. So this is analogous to putting on a weak symmetry breaking field, except that instead of that weak symmetry breaking field being on the boundary of the system and looking at how the correlations and looking at how the spin evolves as you go into the bulk, it's instead take the initial time, our weak symmetry breaking field as choice of initial state, and then look at later times to see if at very late times the system is just forgotten about any of the details of that initial state, so that it then looks just periodic with the period of the drive. Or if not, then it'll be at later times, it'll remember something about the initial state, and you'll see a spontaneous breaking of that time translation symmetry. Okay. Okay, an alternative definition, which is more in spirit to the second definition of ordinary symmetry breaking that I get, is it occurs if the eigenstates of the Floquet operator, okay, which is time translation operated through a single period, if they can't be short range correlated. Okay. If you recall, for like the Ising model or for any ordinary symmetry, any symmetry other than time translation, we said, well, simultaneous eigenstates of the Hamiltonian and the symmetry, here the Hamiltonian or the time evolution operator is the symmetry, and so it's a very compact definition. Okay. And it's analogous to what we said about the ground state being a cat state, except here it's the Floquet eigenstates or cat states. Okay. Any questions? Yeah. Yeah, for all t. So you do expect at short times that you're going to remember the initial state, and you won't expect the system, the time evolution of the system, to be time translation invariant at short times. But by for all t means that if you go out to late enough times, that persists. Flip of all the spins. That's just the Z2 symmetry of the Ising.
Okay, so you're saying if you apply the sigma x over that
will the two cat states that you described, the matter of the eigenstates. Yeah, those are the eigenstates of the spin, flip of all the spins.
Right.
Correct.
What would be the equivalent of that in the time domain? What would be the equivalent of flipping all the spins?
In the time domain?
No.
So, in the time domain, the point is there. The symmetry is the time the operative symmetry that we're talking about here is the time translation operator through one period. That there isn't a Hamiltonian and some second symmetry. There's just one thing. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. So no other symmetry is assumed. And note, there's no restriction here. There's nothing here that's special to like the ground state or low-lying excited state or anything like that. This is just a generic statement, okay? And in any case, that's not a particularly natural thing in driven systems to select. I mean, after all, the spectrum just lies between, you know, on takes values on the circle. There's nothing specific. There's nothing, there's no sort of ground state or anything like that. Yes? Yes. They are basically equivalent. I mean, notice that up here, we said the initial states have to be short range correlated. So one way to think about it, perhaps, is to say that, you know, the fact that the eigenstates cannot be short-range correlated, because the eigenstates are the ones that kind of transform simply under the time evolution operator, and they can't be short-range correlated, actually relates it to this. And there's another argument the other way, which I won't go through entirely right now, but they're equivalent. Okay, so again, we're considering all this in the context of discrete time translation symmetry. So if we're going to talk about a time crystal in this case, or a Floquet time crystal, or if you wish, a discrete time crystal, then you're considering time translation symmetry where the system has a symmetry of translation by t, which is broken down to translation through some multiple of t. So as a result, some observables are going to oscillate with period nt. That means what we're going to see are lower harmonics. Not higher harmonics you expect, but you know, here we'd have lower harmonics. If we look at Floquet eigenstates, on the other hand, then we can probe those, the failure of cluster decomposition. You can probe by looking at the mutual information between far separated regions, A and B. In a Floquet eigenstate, that mutual information, which is kind of a bound on correlations, instead of going to zero, goes to the log of that n, which is the period, the new period that system establishes. Okay. So these are two signatures that you can use. This is, of course, the more natural one in experiments, but we can also look at that in numerical studies. And this is a very natural one for numerics. If you can just define the Floquet eigenstates, you can compute the mutual information and thereby probe whether or not time translation symmetry breaking occurs. Now, so I think the virtues of the definitions that I gave are that they're simple to state. They are easy to check, in principle at least, easy to check both in a theoretical model and in experiments. And there's no wiggle room at that point. Okay. And of course, they are a very natural, maybe the most natural generalization to this kind of flow k case, or more generally to non-equilibrium systems of what we already know and love from ground states and thermal equilibrium. Okay. So the other thing that's nice about those definitions is that you can find models that actually have this. Okay. So here I've written down a chain of Ising spins in one dimension with the following flow k operator, okay, which is to say the following time evolution. There's a period T, which we're going to imagine you break up into two pieces. The first part of that period is, let's say it's pi over 2. I could, of course, make this anything I like and change this coefficient over here. But let's say through the first part of the drive, all you do is apply a magnetic field in the x direction, which, if this were exactly pi over 2, would just flip all of the spins. And on the other hand, in the rest of the drive, which I'm calling this interval T0, you just evolve it through some Hamiltonian that has many body that satisfies many body localization. Okay, which again, I said I'm not really going to go into much detail of what that means, but for now, just take that as a given that's going to help us kind of control this problem, in particular in the way that I mentioned at the beginning of avoiding the heating problem. Okay, so we have two different parts of this drive, and the fact that we need many body localization here is tells us something about what kind of Hamiltonian we have. So what I wrote down for you here is the one that we used in our numerical studies, and by we I really mean Bela and Dominic, and it's just a Ising model with random exchange coupling J, which is ferromagnetic, predominantly which is actually all ferromagnetic but random, some random longitudinal fields, also all pointing predominantly in the same direction, and a random transverse field. Okay. Now, it's just a periodically driven Ising model, and there are lots of interesting prior results on periodically driven Ising models, going back quite a ways, actually. Some of them were studying interesting things like, of course, just the process of thermalization, but some of them were studying topological phases, like a paper by Tom Idicola and collaborators. I think Tom is probably here somewhere. Also, there were interesting studies of the Ising model is of course also a free fermion problem. There are interesting studies of the free fermion problem, which if you were to Jordan Wignerize that free fermion problem has interesting phases, which if you were to Jordan Wignerize it, you would realize that it actually also is a time crystal. However, in the fermionic language, that's not apparent, and it's not a time crystal because of the non-locality of the transformation between the Ising model and free fermions. And moreover, that system didn't have disorder and the things that you need in order to avoid heating if it were to be slightly perturbed away from free fermions into an interacting problem. Nevertheless, that actually is the fermionic language is a very fruitful way to think about it as a starting point for thinking about symmetry-protected topological phases in flow k systems. Okay, but if you Jordan Wignerize it and go into Ising model language, Vedika and company did, and the work that followed theirs, including work by Kurt von Kaiserlink, who I think is here, and our own work, then you actually can see that indeed you have time crystal behavior, although it may not be apparent again. If there's other symmetries in the problem, it may not be so easy to guess or to identify that you have time crystal behavior. But armed with a clear definition of what a time crystal is, as we now are, we can just go ahead and do that. And so there's a very simple soluble limit here. You just take the longitudinal field H equals 0. Okay, now it's trivial. The eigenstates of the MBL Hamiltonian, which is a trivial Hamiltonian, they all just are eigenstates of the different SZ operators. They have some eigenvalues that you can easily determine from the MBL Hamiltonian. And if you look at the eigenvalues now of not just the MBL Hamiltonian, but the full flow k operator, well, there's eigenstates are just, you can see that the eigenstates are cat states. Okay, they are superposition between some particular configuration of spins and the flipped configuration of those spins with some phases that are unimportant to us here. And the eigenvalues of those two different cat states are shifted by pi. Okay. So that's the fact that these are cat states shows that according to that necessarily they're cat states shows according to our second definition that indeed this is a time crystal. Okay. And if you then take those eigenstates and take any given initial configuration and evolve it, what's going to happen is the spins will flip after one period and flip back after the second period and so on. Okay. So this is a time crystal according to our definition. On the other hand, we've obviously taken some very special limit here, and we have to ask whether it's stable to perturbations. Now, again, if we were interested in kind of the normal problems that we grew up learning about as kids, we'd say, well, I have a ground state, I have a gap. Yes, it's a special point, but I'm protected against perturbations by the gap, so I'll be able to argue based on that, that indeed whatever phase I've found is stable to perturbations. Okay, so normally the gap protects us, okay, against perturbations. We find some interesting behavior, we're more or less done. You know, we don't have that luxury here. You know, we're living up here in the spectrum, and actually even the way I've drawn it doesn't do justice to the fact that there's tons of states jammed into the middle of the spectrum, and we cannot appeal to anything like an energy gap to protect the system. So we don't have that, and we kind of have to rely on many-body localization, which is basically the idea that, yes, there are a lot of states close by in energy in the spectrum, but none of those states are nearby in space. So in a local model, you're not really going to see the effect of those. You're not going to, there's a chance that you're still going to be able to survive even perturbing. Okay. But again, that's, I'm not going to try to make the argument that that's convincing here. That would require a lot of, you know, development of many-body localization. What I will do is briefly show you just some numerics checking. If we perturb away, then in fact this survives. So we can perturb away, and we can see by TEBD that for shorter times in larger systems, what you see in red is the oscillations of the z component of the spin with a period that's twice the period of the drive. There's some transient decay, kind of forgetting some things, and then this doubled period oscillation. We can also look at very late times, smaller systems, by exact diagonalization. And you can see this is a log scale over here. So these oscillations are surviving out to times exponentially long in the system size. Okay. We can also look at this neutral information measure that I mentioned and, you know, collapse it to a scaling form. And basically, that indicates that this phase actually survives out to some kind of transverse field roughly of order, you know, order one. Okay. So this is a numerical evidence, okay? And if you believe in many-body localization, then you also would believe that a perturbative argument can be constructed. But actually, I think we can also go a little bit further than that, and we will, okay, momentarily. I just want to also mention that there are some other interesting further investigations. Kurt von Kaiserlinck and Vedika and collaborators also showed that if you look at, in addition to this double period oscillation, there's other stuff that's kind of noisy in any particular realization of disorder, that noise decays away at late times as a power law. Drew Potter and Norm Yao and the group at Berkeley studied this as a function of not only the parameters I mentioned, but also essentially varying that pi pulse into a pi minus epsilon pulse, and we're able to fit collapse the scaling data on the transition onto that of a random Ising transition. They also proposed a specific experimental realization for this, okay, in a system of ions, and recent data from Chris Monroe's group finds more or less, although for a small system size, the expected type of behavior, which is that if you have a system of spins that are not interacting and you apply something like this kind of pi pulse type of situation, then, you know, if you vary the length of the pulse a little bit, there's no rigidity of the system. It's kind of what you'd expect for a single spin. On the other hand, when they're interacting, it really is a time crystal in the sense of having some rigidity as you move away from perfect pi pulses. Okay. So in the few minutes I have remaining, what I'd like to do is go beyond what I just mentioned and actually put this in some sense on a more solid ground and actually a more general framework. Okay, so we mentioned that eigenstate thermalization and many-body localization allow you to sorry, if eigenstate thermalization doesn't occur and many body localization does, then we're protected against heating, and so we can really consider, think about phases of matter in that context. But there is another context, okay, which are usually called pre-thermalization. And in that context, what you have is, for instance, in static systems, if some parameter is very large, you may actually have exponentially slow thermalization, okay, due to the emergence of an approximate symmetry when some parameter in the Hamiltonian is large. And in the driven context, in the high frequency limit, the heating can be exponentially slow in the frequency. As a result, you may have a situation in which for very long times, exponentially long in that frequency, the system doesn't thermalize and heat up to infinite temperature. Now you might say, okay, look, if you go to very long times, eventually the system is going to heat up. If you don't have MBL to protect you, eventually it's going to heat up, and the true long time behavior is actually just boring and thermal at infinite temperature. On the other hand, as John Maynard Keynes said, in the long run, we're all dead. So maybe we shouldn't worry about that. If there's an exponential scale, long scale in the problem, then we should work within that exponentially long scale and potentially find interesting universal behavior there. Now, there are some interesting rigorous results here that can guide us in this. The paper by Dima Vanen and collaborators, DeRocco Hoveneers, and the paper by us, Dominic L. Spellbauer and myself, building upon their work to find, rigorously find a regime in which we can make time crystals and other interesting, for instance, topological phases of matter exist even without disorder, even without many body localization, not necessarily restricted to low dimensions either as a result, but in this pre-thermal regime. I'm going to, just using some of those initials, I'll just lump these theorems together as ADHD theorems, okay, for short, okay. So the first of these, which is through the Dima and collaborators, says that if you have a periodically driven system, okay, and if the local terms in the Hamiltonian, which this can be made precise, I won't bother doing that now, but it can be made precise, if the local terms in the Hamiltonian are sufficiently small, okay, or if the period of the draw, I should say, if the frequency is sufficiently large compared to the size of the local terms in the Hamiltonian, so that this product is small, then there exists some unitary transformation, meaning there's some basis in which this time-dependent drive, Floquet drive, can be very well approximated, meaning up to exponentially small stuff, by evolution under a time-independent Hamiltonian. Okay. Now, obviously,
we're running out of time. So
okay.
Please wrap up soon.
Okay, but I took questions in the middle of my talk, right? So doesn't that count? I mean, or somebody could ask me as a question, "What's the rest of your talk?" I mean, that would be a good question too. That could be question number one. So, so this is highly non-trivial because, after all, this can't be exactly true because we know that the system is going to heat up at, you know, to infinite temperature eventually, so this certainly can't be true. But it can be true up to exponentially long times if there's something exponentially small like this. There's also, okay, so then it turns out you don't necessarily have to have the drive, the period of the drive, and I'll wrap up soon. You don't necessarily have to have the period of the drive to be very small compared to all the terms in the Hamiltonian. It turns out that, for instance, if your Hamiltonian can be written as a sum of two terms, such that time evolution under just one of the terms looks kind of like a symmetry, meaning that if you take that to the nth power, it's just one. Well, then, if the rest of the terms in the Hamiltonian are small compared to the local terms, the operator norm of the local terms in the Hamiltonian, if that's small compared to the frequency of the drive, then it turns out that in some basis, up to exponentially small stuff, we can rewrite the Floquet operator as that operator X, which is like a symmetry generator, acting like a symmetry generator, times time evolution under a time-independent Hamiltonian, where, very importantly, these two operators commute. Okay. So this really is acting as now an emergent symmetry for time evolution under this Hamiltonian. And if this is true, well, this is, of course, exactly the type of thing that we saw in our previous models of time crystal, and so this is the kind of thing that we need. Now, I'll just briefly flash, so this we'll call a pre-thermal Hamiltonian, okay? And if this rapidly thermalizes, meaning if it's a generic, like non-integrable Hamiltonian, and again, we don't need any disorder in this situation, so there's no reason to believe that this won't thermalize, then what happens is the system at intermediate timescales will look like a system in thermal equilibrium. Okay, if the initial state had sufficiently low energy with respect to this Hamiltonian, then it will look like a system in thermal equilibrium, just not with respect to the actual Hamiltonian in the system. It'll look like a system in thermal equilibrium with respect to the pre-thermal Hamiltonian, and that pre-thermal Hamiltonian can certainly have all kinds of interesting universal phenomena. It can have phases, phase transitions, and so on. And so what you really have then is this pre-thermal regime will have a certainly non-equilibrium steady state for which we have a mathematical description that's just like the description of some equilibrium, some associated equilibrium system. Okay, so I'll just flash like our version of these theorems, you know, to show you what the more precise version looks like. What it really says is that there exists a unitary operator. In fact, there's a sequence of such unitary transformations that makes this time-dependent Hamiltonian evolution look more and more like time-independent Hamiltonian evolution up to some error terms, and those error terms get smaller and smaller as we go through the sequence, but only up to some point, n star. At that point, the bounds that we use to show that the error terms get smaller and smaller fail and start to diverge, and that's presumably a sign of heating, although not always, because of course you could apply this to an MVL system, it just means that this method fails at that point. So there are some bounds here which say that, basically because this is related to the frequency of the drive and the size of the local terms, it's saying that the corrections are exponentially small in the claim parameter. So I guess with that, I will hit pause. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, and this last part, this flow k operator squaring to, or like some power of being identity is true for all the SPT and the time crystal phases, but maybe not for this like chiral pumping one that I mentioned. I was wondering, you know, do you see a chance for a pre-thermal version of that?
Well, I guess it probably does with n equal to like the perimeter of the system.
Yeah, but that would go to infinity.
I know, but that goes to infinity. You're right. On the other hand, it does feel like it's a symmetry, you know, yeah. You know, that it does feel like something that shouldn't heat the system up, but I mean, let me just say, I'm very curious about the answer to that myself.
I guess you could cut a small hole in your system, and then n would be the perimeter.
Oh, the perimeter that small.
Still, the phase would still be a little bit.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe it's the edge that's violating this, not the bulk.
Yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, I guess it's probably something you thought about more. I mean, if you have a system where you have just the edges violating, you know, where just the edges heating up, is that not going to infect the bulk too? Baylor probably thought about this more than I have too. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be stable. Yeah.
A long time usually.
Okay. No, but, okay. So let's say the edge is heating up quickly. Right, because I mean, because if we can't apply this, if we can apply this to the bulk, great. But what if the edge heats up quickly? Is that going to the bulk?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, maybe it's okay. I mean, maybe this is close enough to a symmetry. You know, what's happening at the edge? It's a really good question. I don't know.
One place I know where period doubling happens in physics is in the route to chaos.
Yep.
Can you comment how the time crystal is related or not related to, you mentioned pendulum. If you take a pendulum and you add damping and you drive it with a periodic drive, you can get a period doubling.
So
is it just a many body version?
You know,
you're also talking about something with sort of a, I think, you know, symmetry breaking sort of thing happening.
Well, okay. So first of all, the examples that I showed you, although I don't think it's limited to this, particularly in this pre-thermal case, the examples that I discussed were closed quantum systems, not systems that involve dissipation. So I think, you know.
You just need more degrees of freedom. You have two double pendulum or something.
I don't know exactly what the answer to that question is. I mean, I don't know how to make precise. I do think that, particularly through this route of pre-thermalization, we can, for instance, introduce, couple this to a bath and introduce dissipation. And of course, you know, once you have a description that looks kind of like an Ising model, you know, with an order parameter, then it starts to look more classical, and there may be some well-defined sense in which the classical limit of the open system version of this, assuming that that's stable, starts to look more like, you know, the classical chaotic systems. I don't know, but I can imagine a route going that way. Okay. There's also some work by Mike Zalatil, primarily in Norm Yao, unpublished, that is coming from the other direction of, you know, starting with you know, classical oscillators that undergo a transition to chaos and pure doubling, and thinking about coupling them together and so on, and going that way, which also looks like a time crystal. I don't have like a simple crisp answer. I think this is a quantum thing that has some analogies with the classical, you know, pure doubling, and we can make some connections.
The numerical simulation that you, Bella, and Dominic did, how do they change, or what, how did the result depend on the strengths of the disorder? So if you were to tune disorder to zero and just study the ZZ chain, what would you find?
Yeah, so in these cases, you just find, since we weren't trying to get into the pre-thermal limit by going to very high frequencies, we were in a situation there where the system would just heat up to infinite temperature. So if you looked at the Floquet eigenstates, they would look boring in the absence of disorder, with very weak disorder. And if you looked at the time dependence, you would see the system heating up and this going away. So we intentionally put ourselves very much in the MDL limit. Having said that, okay, because of the more recent results, we do know that there is a very interesting pre-thermal case here. So we absolutely could take the disorder to zero or very small, including zero. And so long as the frequency of the drive was large in exactly the way I describe here, we're fine, and the effect persists. Again, so long as I have to qualify that, not in one dimension, because one dimension won't have a symmetry breaking phase, but in two dimensions or higher dimensions, all this will be fine. So long as the initial state has a reasonably low energy compared to the measured in the pre-thermal Hamiltonian. Okay, so it won't be the case in all states, but for initial states that are kind of low energy in the right sense, this will survive. So long as you're pre-thermal. Yeah.
So in your first definition, how does it hold up for dynamically decoupled systems where the equality is true up to certain order in the evolution time? And you can make that order as large as you want. Basically, you can dynamically decouple your system, you know, up to whatever order you want in the evolution time. So would you consider it, does it satisfy your definition or not?
Well, it doesn't satisfy that definition, but as I said, it is also worth considering situations in which you, it doesn't go on forever, like in the pre-thermal case, where this doesn't last forever, but it lasts just for a very long time. So long as that time, as you hear, I think that the right criterion is so long as that time is exponentially long in some controllable parameter, such as the frequency. I think if things last exponentially long, either in system size or some parameter like this, then I'm happy to say that they satisfy the definitions. And if they're not exponentials, then I would say no. No.
Could you elaborate a bit on what exactly are those symmetry, this X, for those Floquet SPD phases and for the chiral phases?
Yes. I can't elaborate much on the chiral phases, but I can elaborate in this case.
You seem to infer that for the chiral phases, some sort of translation symmetry.
Yes, but let me just talk about the cases that I know best. Yeah. So here, what this operator is in this case is just it's flipping all the spins, okay, if, for instance, we could just have the Ising model here, okay, periodically driven Ising model, and here what the operator X is, you know, you perform a pi pulse, and the operator X that comes out of it is just flipping all the spins. You now have this pre-thermal Hamiltonian, which is an Ising model in zero longitudinal, even if the original problem had a longitudinal field here, it's zero longitudinal field, and that spin flip operator just commutes with this. So it's not a symmetry of the original problem. It's, in that case, it's a symmetry of the I should say, let me put it slightly differently. It's not a symmetry of the Hamiltonian of the original problem. However, in a rotated basis, it's a symmetry of the Floquet operator, which probably is the right way to think about symmetries in this context. So if this thing is in the high temperature phase, the low temperature phase of this Ising model, you see oscillating behavior like this. And if it initial state is such that you're in the high temperature phase, you know, you won't. So you can derive kind of a field theory representation of this. So just coming back to your point about the symmetries, you know, the system has, you know, it has symmetry under discrete time translation. It, thanks to ADHD, has this other symmetry of the Floquet operator, okay, you know, which flips all the spins. And like I said, it's not really a symmetry of H, it's symmetry of this. Now, it's an important point is that this is kind of analogous to an antiferromagnet, because now you have a system that has a time translation symmetry, and it's got this, you know, merge in Z2 symmetry, and you're breaking down to, you know, Z, just like an antiferromagnet breaks spatial translation symmetry and the spin flip or time reversal symmetry, but preserves the two of them. But on the other hand, it's different because these two symmetries are intimately linked. This new symmetry is always present if time translation is present, it's not present otherwise. So that's an important difference. I should probably end here before running way too much over. Thank you.